This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Futuro.
Hey, what's up, family? Latino USA is coming to Los Angeles. We're having a live show on Sunday, June 26th at the theater at the Ace Hotel. And we want you to take center stage. So here's what we're asking our dear listeners who are Angelenos. What do you love about your city? What's your favorite spot? What makes LA such a special place for Latinos and Latinas and Latinx? Call us at 646-571-1224. That's 646-571-1224. And leave us your message, and we might play your call on stage at our live show. Also, why don't you join us in person? The show is part of KPCC's Public Radio Palooza. You can buy your tickets at kpcc.org/palooza. That's kpcc.org/palooza. We can't wait to hear your love notes to Los Angeles, mis queridos y queridas. Y nos vemos pronto, LA. No te vayas. Dear listener, just a quick note that the episode you're about to listen to mentions suicide. Take care.
The only thing that really stood between me and the future I wanted for myself was money. But as it turned out, money was the hardest thing to come by. I did not know abortion funds existed, and as a poor Latina in a deeply repressive and abusive home, there were few places I knew to turn to.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, what exactly does it look like for our communities?
We will not go back!
They just don't want abortion, but they have no plan for what to do with women who are carrying pregnancy to term. They have no plan to take care of women in that respect.
More people need to be out here supporting the marginalized women, like Black women, immigrant women, disabled women, and also trans people too.
These are the voices of a generation that grew up with the legal right to abortion. The women before them fought to obtain it. Now they fight to preserve it.
In the last 2 hours, an unprecedented leak suggests a majority of...
Last month, the news site Politico published a leaked Supreme Court document that suggests that the country's top court is poised to overturn Roe v. Wade, a decision that legalized abortion in the United States almost 50 years ago. The move to rescind Roe would allow states to individually place automatic bans on abortion.
In Arkansas, we are prepared to save the lives of unborn children. We put a law in place in 2019 that we are essentially calling a trigger law, which will go into effect in the event that the court does, in fact, overturn Roe v. Wade in the Casey decision, which would allow us to have a total ban on abortions.
At least 12 other states have already passed these so-called trigger laws. Now, while the leaked document isn't final, it underlines a grim outlook for reproductive rights in the U.S.
Welcome, everybody.
Tonight, Oklahoma's governor signing a new law criminalizing abortions, one of the most severe in the country.
We want Oklahoma to be the most pro-life state in the country.
The new law now making it a felony to perform an abortion at any point in a known pregnancy, punishable by up to 10 years in prison. The
pregnant women- In Texas, 26-year-old Lizelle Herrera was charged with murder last April.
Lizelle Herrera was arrested Thursday in Rio Grande City.
After authorities said she, quote,
caused the death of an individual by self-induced abortion.
Herrera was released from jail after posting a $500,000 bond. The DA's office released a statement in part saying, in reviewing this case, it is clear that Ms. Herrera cannot and should not be prosecuted for the allegation against her.
Many fear the United States could become just one of a handful of countries worldwide that have rolled back abortion rights since the mid-1990s.
El Salvador implemented a full ban on abortion in 1998, including in cases of rape or incest. Women who go to public hospitals after a miscarriage are sometimes accused of murder and are charged with aggravated homicide.
Making abortion illegal would disproportionately impact Black and brown communities. Already 60% of patients obtaining abortions are people of color, and 75% are classified as low income or poor. These are the same communities that already struggle the most to access abortion in the first place. Some of the states with the strictest laws against the procedure are also the ones with the highest poverty rates in the country. That means that for some patients, getting an abortion is already virtually impossible. Black women, and Latinas, many of whom are Black, also share common struggles. Money to pay for the procedure, no means to travel hundreds, if not thousands of miles to get to a provider. It's even more difficult for undocumented immigrants who risk detention and eventually deportation by traveling across state lines. 60% of Latinos and Latinas and 68% of Black adults support the right to choose an abortion. And this challenge to this is happening during an election year, making the issue much more urgent.
Should the court adopt conservative positions, that might spur a GOP turnout which retakes the House and Senate, or it could motivate women and the young, which would advantage Democrats.
Today, I'm joined by three guests from different backgrounds to talk about not only the politics of abortion, but also how this impacts our real lives. So welcome to Latino USA, Tina Vasquez, an investigative journalist and a friend of Latino USA. So welcome back. Lori Bertram Roberts, you're executive director of the Yellowhammer Fund. And Sabrina Rodriguez, you're a national political correspondent at Politico. So I'm going to actually start because I did have two abortions. So I am a part of this conversation. And, you know, when we think about why is Roe v. Wade important, I am always bringing it back to the fact that Roe v. Wade is a legal decision based on a woman's right to privacy, period. But, you know, I'm wondering, for everybody, it's different. So actually, Tina, when I ask you, so why is Roe v. Wade important to you? What's your answer?
I mean, the short answer is freedom. It means everything to me to be able to decide if I have children and I don't want to have children. And so the idea that that will not be a constitutional right in the United States terrifies me. I mean, as long as I've been alive, Roe v. Wade has been in place. To me, is a huge blow for bodily autonomy.
Mm. Lori, what does Roe v. Wade mean to you?
It's bodily autonomy. It's human rights. It's reproductive justice. To me, it's not even just about having the right not to parent, but sometimes it's when you have all of your rights, you can find out whether or not you want to parent, right? Then you can be sure in the choice that you made. But when you don't even have all of your options, something is robbed from you. Was it really your choice? I don't want anyone to have an abortion that they don't want. I don't want anyone to have a pregnancy they don't want. And we can't have that without Roe because Roe is the floor, not the ceiling for rights.
In the context of the reporting that you do, Sabrina, and the life you lead as a national correspondent at Politico, dedicated to covering politics, when that question is asked to you as a human being, what is your answer as to why Roe v. Wade is important?
The debate around abortion rights has gone back and forth for decades. But I'd almost say that I feel that I've taken it for granted because it has been just rhetoric. It has been just, oh, okay, there's anti-abortion activists that are saying these things and want to do these things. But at the end of the day, Roe v. Wade is there. And, you know, I still have that right. Okay, no, this politics that we've been hearing for all this time is real and has very real life consequences in a way that I think Washington reporters are often jaded, so focused on the, you know, internal infighting and battle about it all. But this is real life. This will affect people. This could cost lives.
It is going to be one of those moments where you're like, well, so where were you when you heard about the leaked documents from the Supreme Court? I was actually in bed. I think I may have been doom scrolling on Instagram. And I saw that Politico was breaking this. And I was like, wait, what?
Breaking news overnight of that shocking
leak of that confidential government document sparking concern nationwide.
And this is beyond unheard of that I am sitting here holding a draft.
We are here at the Supreme Court tonight ahead of what could be a seismic shift in American law.
And my reaction was like, I always thought this day could happen. The anti-abortion forces have not been playing for decades. This is the Supreme Court that we have facing us as women in the freest country of the world, the greatest democracy of the world. And so there's a real sense of being slapped in the face and real hypocrisy. But let's go around. Where were you, Tina, when you heard of it? And what was your gut reaction?
I was also in bed and I got an alert on my phone and I was surprised by how much it hurt. I've covered sexual and reproductive health and rights and justice for a while now. I knew this moment was coming eventually, but it still hurt like hell.
Mm. Lori?
I too was in bed and I picked up my phone and everyone was messaging me. Everyone on the staff, our staff Slack was lighting up and I was like, oh, okay, well, let me see who released it. And then when I realized it was Politico, I was like, oh, this is bad. When I started reading what was in it, it was the naked cruelty of it. And I just broke down in tears. I too was surprised at my own reaction because I've been planning for this for years. I've been doing this work for over a decade. You know, it's one thing to know you're going to give birth and it's another thing to give birth. Like, it's one thing to know that this is coming and then it's another thing to see it in writing and then to see the things that he said was just unnecessarily cruel.
So, Sabrina, you're at Politico. Sometimes when it's so big, people within the organization don't know that a big story is about to drop. But obviously, you're the closest. So where were you? What do you remember?
I have to laugh because we were all in bed. I was too. I was in bed, also watching TV, scrolling through like TikTok or Instagram or something at that point. And an email came in maybe 30 minutes before the story came out from some of our editors saying, hey, we want to let you all know this incredibly sensitive story is going to be coming out. Just keep an eye out. Please do not get into Twitter fights over it. So my initial reaction was like, oh God, what are we publishing? Like, so I kept obsessively like refreshing the homepage. I kept obsessively refreshing Twitter. And the first tweet that I saw was from one of the authors, Josh Gerstein. And it was shocking.
The reproductive rights conversation, the feminist movement, the women's movement was of my generation.
No priest or politician, no doctor or any hospital administrator, no government official or husband who should have the right to force any woman to have a child against her will.
And so when Roe v. Wade became law, the image of women dying from botched abortions was seared in my mind. And so 10 years later, I end up having to actually have my own abortion. I'm like, I have this right. This is something that I have grown up with. I saw women fight for it. So that's kind of how I approached abortion, also because I was not being raised in my deeply Catholic Mexican family back in Mexico. Tina, you actually had the opposite. Your family was much more traditional and difficult. So as a little girl, what was your perception of abortion and the conversation around reproductive rights?
you know, I still don't have a sense of how my mom felt about those things. And my dad was like the dominant force in our family. My dad is a very traditional Mexican man. My dad is Catholic. And my introduction to all of this was being a very young person, discovering feminism through punk rock and listening to like Riot Girl music and Bikini Kill. So I've identified as pro-choice since I was 11 or 12. And it was like in direct opposition to everything that my dad believed, which made it more appealing to me. But I think what really changed things for me was when I was a younger reporter and I started reporting on repro full time and learning about reproductive justice. That clicked a lot of things into place for me. And it changed how I thought about my own experiences from a reproductive justice lens.
Mm. Lori, what about you?
I was actually growing up in the Midwest. I grew up with the white side of my family, and they were very religious. Actually, I grew up in the Independent Fundamentalist Baptist Church. So no pants, no excessive jewelry, no makeup. Women don't speak in the church. Purity culture. I was born in 78, so it was the 80s, so it was the rise of the anti-abortion movement.
Mr. President, we'll now turn to Diane Sawyer for her round of questions. Diane?
First, Mr. President, do you consider abortion murder or a sin?
I have believed that in the appointment of judges that all that was specified in the party platform was that they respect the sanctity of human life. Now that
and I got steeped in all of that. It was nonstop. Oh, you should be grateful that your mom even gave birth to you because she had the option to abort you. And obviously people pressured her because your dad was Black.
Wow. And this was actually said to you as a little girl, what, 10, 12 years old?
Oh, like 7, 8.
Wow.
We were always told like we were survivors of the abortion Holocaust. And I got pregnant at 16 and I got married because that's what you do when you're religious and you've sinned. For Jesus. And then, I mean, I got older and I needed an abortion. And also, I almost died in a Catholic hospital because I was having a miscarriage and they would not give me an abortion because the embryo still had a heartbeat. And they were like, go home and don't come back unless you're hemorrhaging.
Oh, gosh.
And so I didn't come back until I was hemorrhaging and I almost died. Because Catholic hospitals effectively were in practice right now like a post-Roe existence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
a lot of people don't realize that.
Perhaps there is no one who grew up with more kind of an awareness of abortion as a reality than you. So, Sabrina, what about you?
In my household, I grew up in South Florida, Miami, Cuban family. And my abuela, from a young age, would have very public and open conversations in front of me about abortion and about her, you know, supporting it. Seeing the reaction that she's had to this, her saying, "Este país está en decadencia," and just saying, you know, what this means for her to be living through this. And she's 92 now. So for her, she kind of can't believe that this is where we're at.
Coming up on Latino USA, we go deep into the real life implications of having an abortion for women of color and the impact this issue might have in this year's midterm elections. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo, modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. I'm talking about what it would look like if Roe v. Wade is overturned for communities of color. And I'm joined by Tina Vasquez, Sabrina Rodriguez, and Lori Bertram Roberts. Let's jump back to our conversation now. We all recognize in the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the people who most will be affected are the people who are poor, economically disadvantaged, do not have access to information, i.e. resources, the ability to have transportation, time off. And actually, Tina, you know, when I read your personal essay about this, you really encompass that. So I'm wondering if you could please share with us a fragment of what you recently wrote for Prism Reports.
Okay. The only thing that really stood between me and the future I wanted for myself was money. But as it turned out, money was the hardest thing to come by. I did not know abortion funds existed, and as a poor Latina in a deeply repressive and abusive home, there were few places I knew to turn to. At the time, I did not have the kind of relationship with my parents that would have made it safe to ask them for help. I'm certain my father would have beaten me and forced me to become a parent, but I also knew my parents didn't have a dollar to spare.
Thank you, Tina. Can you actually start us off in this conversation with your very personal moment when you're 19 years old and you're carrying a pregnancy that you did not want?
I was trying to save money for my abortion, and my partner was substance dependent, and he knew where I was saving my money, and he would take it and he would use it for drugs. And so I had to reschedule my appointment a couple of times, and I became increasingly desperate. But at the end of the day, I told my partner's mom that I couldn't pay for my community college textbooks, and she gave me the money. And that's how I was eventually able to do it. I didn't drive, so getting to the clinic was also really challenging. I was living at home. I couldn't talk to my parents about any of it. And even then, among other people's stories I've heard, especially folks who are undocumented, folks who live in the South, disabled folks like that, I had a pretty easy experience, and I lived in California, which is widely thought of as a state where abortion access comes pretty easy to people. You know, in the piece, I talk about how I would pray that I could get the money to have an abortion, or I would pray that I would have the courage to kill myself, because I felt every moment that I was pregnant and I didn't want to be was agonizing to me.
These are the things, these are the real life things if you're a young woman and you end up pregnant. Lori, this is the work that you do on a daily basis in Alabama.
It is.
Which in many ways is a state where it already kind of operates as if, right?
Yeah.
Access to abortion is so, I mean, I know the state of Missouri. There is one clinic and Mississippi as well. So when you hear that Roe v. Wade could likely be overturned, tell us about who you know will be affected most and describe for us what it actually will look like.
You know, the challenges that we help people get around and the barriers that we help them get around are very similar to Tina's story, right? We help them make sure they can get to their appointments safely. We help them navigate being in domestic abusive situations. Sometimes we help them get right their safety plans. Sometimes we help them refer them to services. Sometimes getting their abortion is the first step on getting out of that situation. Maybe they have the money for their appointment, but maybe they just need help making sure they can eat, plan out a timeline so nobody finds out that they went. Maybe they need to go to a clinic further away because they go to a Christian school and they can't be seen by protesters. So there's all kinds of reasons why people call for our help, and it's not always because they're low income. But let's be honest, for most working class, even lower middle class people, who has $600 to $1,200 just sitting around that they can just give up freely. A lot of people don't. And that's just the money for the procedure. That's not money to fill their prescription that they might have for antibiotics or pain meds. That's not for the gas to get there and back. And most people have to drive 2 to 3 hours already, if not four. And that's two trips because of the waiting periods where they have to go to one appointment and then come back in 24 or 72 hours, depending on the state. There's just barrier upon barrier upon barrier. And I don't even want to get started on the barriers for undocumented people, because most clinics, you have to have an ID. So that's an additional barrier for our undocumented community, but also for the Black community, which is overly counted amongst those who don't have IDs. If you're a minor in Mississippi, you have to have both of your parents' consent. If you don't have both of them, then the parent who's your guardian has to go and write a letter and have it notarized. You know, all of these things that a lot of people who are low income don't have easy access to. So I'm sorry that answer was so long.
I don't think you have to apologize for it being a long answer, because I think part of what you're saying is it is very complicated. Now, Sabrina, you know, for many young Latinos and Latinas, the first political protest they're going to go to is probably not an pro-immigrant rights demonstration, as some people might suspect. It's actually an anti-abortion protest, because if you're going to church, that might be how you're being raised. So can you talk a little bit about what you see in terms of how Roe v. Wade turning back might impact these communities that are at odds and hypocritical about their stance on abortion?
Maria, you know that you and I could spend days talking about all the misconceptions about Latinos on such a range of issues. But on abortion, I mean, we've seen poll after poll in recent years show us that actually a majority of Latinos and Latinas do support safe access to abortion and potentially oppose a politician that is trying to restrict access to abortions. And it is complicated when we add in the religious aspect of it, because so many people have been brought up in the church. So you hear Democrats saying, oh, this is absolutely going to bring out Latinos to vote in November. This is absolutely going to energize them because they don't necessarily have as conservative views. And then we hear Republicans saying, okay, no, but if you have a strong Catholic belief, then you automatically must be against abortions, or you grew up in the evangelical church or your family is part of it, then you're going to be more likely to be anti-abortion. So there is absolutely a mix of opinions on what this will ultimately mean, but the growing young Latino population do lean liberal. They do lean progressive. They are more mobilized on issues like this. So it's really hard to imagine that across the country, and I'll speak more specifically about battleground states where they are incredibly influential. So places like Arizona, Texas, Georgia, Nevada, these are places where I think there is very much potential for this issue to move people and to move young Latinos who, yeah, maybe were brought up in the Catholic Church, but it doesn't even have to be that they're rejecting the church, but don't see that as an essential piece of them being a good Catholic. I say the air quotes good Catholic, but just that it doesn't have to be one and the same.
If you look at who's in the abortion fund movement, it's mostly young folks who are under 40. And if you look at in the battleground states, who's running those funds, especially in Texas, that's who's running the funds. I mean, La Frontera Fund, like all that stuff down in the RGV, that's not white folks. They ain't Black folks. So the abortion funding is coming from within the community that is being served.
Love that. Thank you. All right, Tina. So let's turn to the midterms. Do you think that what could happen in the Supreme Court will get Latino and Latina voters to turn out? And if they do turn out, do you think that they're going to be turning out for the Democratic Party or the Republican Party?
I think people are increasingly resentful about being told that they could vote our way out of this. I mean, Democrats are in power now, and we're seeing some of the worst attacks on bodily autonomy, not just Roe versus Wade, but on gender-affirming care. So we're seeing really disgusting, unprecedented attacks when Joe Biden is in office. Sincerely, I'm very unclear on how this will shake out. I don't know if this will mobilize people to vote. People are very frustrated by what is happening and the continued push to tell them to vote to change things when they do vote and it's not changing things.
So Sabrina, again, your temperature check on Latino and Latina voters and how and if this is going to mobilize them during the midterms.
I hate to be pessimistic, but I think covering politics to some extent has made me fairly pessimistic, to be honest. I think it becomes hard for Democratic candidates and lawmakers looking to be reelected to head towards November and say, you know, you have to come out and vote for us again to protect abortion rights when we're seeing firsthand that they are unable to do that. We're seeing a lot of people disillusioned with the Democratic Party saying, you know, you always come and court our vote and especially Latinos and Black voters, I would argue. And when it comes time to deliver for us, you don't come through. And I think that that's something that the Democratic Party is going to have to reckon with. I will say the one bright spot is maybe if Democrats can message better on the stakes at the state level. A lot of governor's races this year could ultimately determine what different states are going to do on this. States like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, where, you know, if the governorship flips, the stakes really are high. If the governorships flip to Republican, there will likely be abortion bans and that enforcement. So on that front, I'm really curious to see if this does impact state house races and make people a little bit more aware of what their local and state politics looks like. But it's hard because so much of the money that's spent on midterms is on these federal races where people already have a perception of Congress as being ineffective.
Mm. All right. So, Lori, what's your take?
When it comes to the Women's Health Protection Act and other things, voting rights, anything that they are not passing in the Senate, currently they don't have the votes, but we all know that they could remove the filibuster and they could pass these things by majority if they just figured out a way. This is politics. We know there's always a way to make a way. Stuff is on the line. People's rights are on the line. Get it done. Nobody is going to come out and vote for them if all of this happens. And I'm not impressed with people not focusing on the state level races because that's how we got here. Because literally how we ended up with the trigger ban in Mississippi is because pro-life Democrats voted for it when they had control of the Senate in Mississippi.
I want to end doing a quick round robin, kind of an emotional check-in, because we started with an emotional check-in. But this one is going to be for you, Lori. Are you feeling like, no, we got this? Or are you feeling more doom and gloom?
I'd say I'm somewhere in the middle, right? I'm like, we got this if we got to. Oh, man, do we gotta? Could y'all make it so we ain't got to? I mean, we can, but I don't want to. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, because we've been planning for this for a long time. Teaching people about self-managed abortion and how to stay safe while they take misoprostol, we didn't invent that. Women in Brazil did. We learned from the women in South America and frankly, from women in Texas. Like the rest of the nation learned from Texas, right? And from people in the RGB. Everybody's like, oh, this new thing, abortion by mail and from pills overseas. No, no, people have been doing this for a while. It's just like, y'all really want this? Like this world where people have to go 1,000 miles to get a procedure or they might be criminalized for taking pills where states are already making it so they can charge people with murder. Do we want to be El Salvador in that way? Like, I mean, so maybe people could act more urgently over there in DC. Maybe, you know, Capitol Hill could get on it.
Well, I guess that was just a segue to you, Sabrina. Lori took us to Washington, D.C. So what's your temperature check?
I hope that the attention on this keeps up and the energy on this keeps up, because something that has often been frustrating in Washington, D.C. is to see, oh, there's momentum and discussion around an issue for a month. And then, oh, suddenly it takes the backseat to the next sexy subject because they know they can't get it done. So then they pick something new to, you know, make the pet project and the focus for the week. So I really hope that that doesn't happen with an issue as important and just as historic as this opinion would be, you know, when it officially comes out. And one of the things that I care a lot about, though, is journalists right now, including myself being in DC, have a huge responsibility to get this right and to hopefully not stick to the DC bubble, really look outside to what the real life impact is going to be in all these individual states and how it impacts different communities.
And Dina, just before we leave, just doing an emotional check-in with you.
I'm feeling very conflicted things. Lori, I'm sorry, but personally, I'm deeply relying on the leadership of abortion funds and reproductive justice advocates.
We'll be here.
I know that people will be able to continue to access abortion because of them, and I'm certainly turning to them for guidance and leadership. On the other hand, I also am really, really afraid. I think that we're going to enter kind of a new era for criminalization. You know, if you look at people that access abortion the most, they're low-income folks, and together Black and Latino people make up the biggest population of abortion patients. These are exactly the same communities that are already surveilled and over-policed and criminalized and disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. And I'm especially thinking about undocumented folks who live in states where they are going to have to combat anti-abortion and anti-immigrant laws, and they live at that kind of intersection. So I feel very conflicted. I'm glad that we have people like Lori, and I'm also really, really terrified for how things are going to shake out in the next few months.
Tina, Lori, Sabrina, thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA and for sharing all the facts and also for bringing your personal stories tied to this issue. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Patricia Zulbarán and edited by Andrea López Cruzado. It was mixed by Julia Caruso. Special thanks to Pablo Manriquez from Latino Rebels. The Latino USA team includes Marta Martinez, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., Alejandra Salazar, and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Our director of engineering is Stephanie LeBeau. Our associate engineers are Gabriela Baez and JJ Carubin. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And remember to find us on all of your social media. Y no te olvides, no te vayas. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
This episode
from PRX.